This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the Bills have wrapped up this first week of voluntary offseason conditioning. They'll be back at it next Monday. Report today from the Charlotte Observer that the Bills are going to hold a joint practice week with the Carolina Panthers leading up to their August 16th preseason game in Charlotte. Joint practice is to be held at Wofford College, site of the Panthers camp in Spartanburg, South Carolina. The Bills and the rest of the NFL found out about their schedules last night. The Bills opened the season in 2019 with two games in the same stadium. They'll play first the Jets at MetLife Stadium, then go back and play the Giants in week 2, the first home game against Cincinnati in week 3. Bills will play their first Thanksgiving game since 1994, 25 years on Thanksgiving this year, 4:30 kickoff on CBS TV, the Bills and the Dallas Cowboys. And the Bills are the only team in the NFL with no primetime games on the schedule right now. As usual, that might change. The 50th season of Monday Night Football kicks off with a doubleheader on September 9th, opens with a pair of division winners. The Saints and the Houston Texans will play in the first game at 7 o'clock, and then the Raiders host the Denver Broncos in the Monday Night Football nightcap. And the Cleveland Browns have the spotlight on them. The league gave the Browns 4 primetime games this year, including 3 in the first 5 weeks of the season. One of the most notable takeaways from the release of the schedule last night. Stanley Cup playoffs tonight, 3 more games. It starts at 7 o'clock with an Eastern Conference game, game 4 of the Washington-Carolina series. The Capitals lead that series 2-1. Following that, 8:30, St. Louis and Winnipeg. It is game 5 of their series there, and that series is tied at 2 wins apiece. And the late-night game in the Stanley Cup playoffs starts at 10 o'clock tonight in San Jose. It is Game 5 of the series between Las Vegas and San Jose. Vegas leads that series 3-1. Bison's off today. No game today. Back home to open up a homestand tomorrow. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Normally we talk to this guest on Fridays. We moved him up. We've got a busy show coming up tomorrow. Happy to have him too, because it's 1 week officially from round one of the NFL draft. Happy to have Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. Greg is on the line with us. Hello, Greg. We're up here in Buffalo. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. How are you? Good to see you.
Murph, Steve, how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Doing really well.
I asked you last week what teams do in these final days before the draft. What does Greg Cosell do in the final week before the draft? Can you really keep looking at video for one more week?
That's what I'm doing. It's driving me nuts. I wish I had about 2 more weeks. There's probably about 50 guys that I wish I would get a chance to see, but what can you do? You know, time waits for no one.
Okay, yeah. We'll try to ask you nothing about those 50.
We've worked through in the weeks preceding this, when we've asked you about a bunch of different positions, defensive line, offensive line. And before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, we're going to ask you about tight ends and cornerbacks today. But is there any position group in this draft? I may have asked you this before, but I'm sorry. Forgive me if I have. Is there a position group in this draft that is outstanding?
I think that D-line would be considered to be really good in this draft. I think O-line has some really solid prospects. O-line, Steve, as you know, is never sexy, but I think there's a lot of really good prospects in this draft. And, you know, the thing about O-line is, with very few exceptions, 8 or 9 offensive linemen play for every team every year. It's very rare when only 5 play. I think the Rams last year may have had all 5 play each game as the starters, but pretty much 8 or 9 guys play. And so a lot of offensive linemen who are not necessarily thought of as first or second round picks end up playing.
Right. Well, so let's move on.
We're going to talk about tight ends, right?
Right, exactly.
And before we talk about individuals, Greg, just tell me, from a Buffalo perspective, a 9th overall pick, how often is a tight end worth a top 10 selection in the draft? Is that rare? Is that okay? What's your take on that?
You know, a lot of this Murph's conventional wisdom from years and years past.
Right.
And the game has changed. I think in years past, tight ends were not necessarily viewed as top 10 picks unless they were seen as absolutely special. I mean, I remember going back, it's probably a good 12, 15 years that Kellen Winslow Jr. was a top 10 pick. That name just happened to pop into my head.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot, you can go back over 20 years when the game was totally different, and Kyle Brady out of Penn State, who would probably now be viewed as a fifth or sixth round pick, I believe was a top 12 pick, maybe a top 10 pick in the draft. That might have been 1996 or 97. But tight ends, I think, have to be viewed as very special for that to happen. And I think there's one in this draft that would be seen as that way, and that would be T.J. Hockenson from Iowa.
Why?
Well, first of all, he's a really complete player. And when I do my draft notes, I have strengths, weaknesses, transition. And on T.J. Hockenson, I truly do not have a weakness. Hmm. Now, every player entering the league obviously needs refinement and polish in their game because the NFL game is different. But I did not really feel that he had a defined weakness where I said, my God, he really needs work on that. He's a terrific receiver. He's an outstanding blocker. I mean, this guy pancakes people.
Well, that's nice. And as you know, I mean, a tight end is only as good as he is when he's on the field. And a lot of tight ends, they turn into these role players. You put him in on passing situations. You take him off on running situations. Hockenson is a three-down tight end.
Without question. And what you just said, though, his teammate Noah Fant, who is very fast and vertically fast. He's not a particularly great route runner, but he's fast and explosive and prevents that vertical dimension, which every team wants. He may be viewed in exactly that way. And my guess is he could be all over people's boards. When I say all over boards, it's not as if he's a fourth round pick, but some might see him as a top 10 player because of that vertical dimension and the explosiveness. And some may say that, hey, he can only do one thing. And while we really like that one dimension, we don't see him at that level in the draft.
Greg, is there a comparable you have for T.J. Hockenson, somebody that we're familiar with in the league right now?
You know, it's a crazy thing to say because obviously this guy is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he just retired, and that would be Rob Gronkowski. Now, they're different in the sense that Gronk was a bigger man, a more powerful man. Hockenson is a little bit smaller and probably a little more short area quick than Gronkowski was. But I think in terms of a complete tight end, Murph, who the kind of tight end that can block really effectively as a line of scrimmage tight end and can also be a route runner both as a line of scrimmage tight end and detached from the formation, I think T.J. Hockenson fits that role.
You talked about Noah Fant a moment ago. Where would Noah Fant fall in comparisons to some of the other guys? It sounds to me like he's more of a Dallas Clark kind of tight end to Noah Fant.
You might think of him even more as a Jimmy Graham type.
Okay.
You know, I think a guy who's purely a receiver and can run. Now, we know tight ends. We know that's valuable, Steve. I mean, the league has really evolved. A lot of teams run what we call 3-by-1 or 1-by-3 sets. A 3-by-1 set has a wide receiver as the single receiver to the short side of the field. A 1-by-3 set has a tight end as the single receiver to the short side of the field. And that's become very prevalent in the league with a lot of different tight ends who can line up as that single receiver and win. And I think Noah Fant certainly falls into that category.
Greg, I was reading stuff about Noah Fant this week, and one draft observer whom I respect said he's the kind of guy who will develop into a tight end that forces teams to kind of game plan around him to account for him. Do you see that in his game?
Yes, because of the vertical dimension, and that's why he'll be a value to someone who, like I said, he could easily go in the top 10 due to that, Murph, because ultimately, if you line him up on the outside, he can probably win, so he becomes very much like a receiver that can run by corners, and so therefore you need to make sure that there's someone over the top of that corner to prevent the big play. Noah Fant probably and likely presents that kind of vertical dimension as a tight end.
Is there any concern? I mean, both these guys, Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson, came from Iowa. Is there any concern? I mean, NFL scouts know about them, but were they productive as you would like to see two top-tier tight ends like that? Did they, you know, were they productive enough at that level to say, okay, they're going to continue on in the NFL in that regard?
Yes, and the reason I would answer that in the affirmative, Steve, is because Iowa is very much of sort of an old-school conventional offense where they line up with the quarterback under center. They have a what would be considered a pro-set run game. They're not a spread offense necessarily. Look, George Kittle, who I believe set an NFL record this year for most receiving yards by a tight end in his second year in the league, came out of Iowa. And I believe in his final 2 years, Steve, at Iowa, he caught maybe 20 and 22 balls.
Right.
So Hockenson caught more than that, as did Fant. So relative to the offense in which they played, they actually had outstanding production as receivers.
We're on the line with Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst, NFL matchup on ESPN, senior producer in NFL Films. We're talking about tight ends. I liked Irv Smith, Alabama, a lot in the championship game. And I like the fact, Greg, and maybe this is just my particular bias, his father was a player. His father was a first-round pick, right?
Yeah, I remember his father, as you do, Murph.
Yeah.
And I think he projects well to the league with his combination of smooth and fluid route running, his ability to work all three levels of the defense. He's got good hands. He can run after catch. He's a pretty accomplished blocker. He's just not real big. So the question becomes at what, about maybe 240, 245 pounds, can he line up as a line of scrimmage tight end and really be effective as a blocker? That remains to be seen. But I think he's a quality prospect as well. Now, he's a far better route runner than Noah Fant is. He's not quite as vertically explosive, but he's a much better route runner.
And what about the last tight end I want to ask you about, San Jose State, Josh Oliver. That's a name I'm not familiar with. I have not seen him play. What is your take on Josh Oliver?
Well, I like Josh Oliver. And then I'm going to tell you about the tight end that I think is the second best tight end besides Hockenson in this draft, who we have not mentioned yet. But Josh Oliver is another guy who's a solid prospect. He's very smooth. He's another guy that has he can attack all three levels. I wouldn't call him an elite athlete, but he's certainly a very good athlete and moves well. I think he's an ascending talent. I think if he's a good kid and he takes to coaching, I think with experience he could develop into what we would call a tight end one, your number one tight end. But the guy I just want to mention who I think is the second best tight end prospect in this draft is Jay Sternberger out of Texas A&M.
Why do you like
and
him?
I think his tape is really, really good. And I think, to be honest with you, Murph, when I watched him, he very much reminded me in the way in which he moved, he reminded me of Travis Kelce. And Sternberger is another guy, played 1 year at Texas A&M. I think he's just scratching the surface of his ability. He lined up both on the line of scrimmage, detached from the formation. I think he fits today's NFL game really, really well.
You know, tell me if I'm wrong, and I might be. I very well could be, Greg, but it strikes me as tight end at the tight end spot. And we try to guess, where's this guy going to go, what round, how early? A lot of that is more dependent maybe than in most other positions on what the team needs, right? Some teams have a value on a tight end that other teams don't just because of the offense they run. Correct? Incorrect? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think when all's said and done, everybody would like an explosive athlete at the tight end position if you can get one, but you're 100% right. It comes down to what you prioritize as an offense. You may prioritize something over that, and therefore you don't draft Jay Sternberger, and you draft another tight end in the fourth round who's not going to be Jay Sternberger.
Right.
So, yes, it definitely comes down to what coaches always call scheme adaptability. That's the difference in some ways, guys, between scouts and coaches. Scouts look more at a lot of the measurables. Coaches think more about how a player fits into their particular scheme.
Well, to me, a tight end has always been a difficult role to fill because you want a guy who's big enough and strong enough to push around a defensive end on his own and fast enough to outrun a safety or a corner even in the passing game and run good routes. Those guys don't exist. They're like left tackles. You can't find those guys. Gronkowski's a generational talent. So you're always trying to fill in or do with what you have athletically at that spot. Either he's a physical enough to play down inside, or he's nifty and small enough to play outside, and it's hard to find a guy who can do both. It's almost unicorn.
That's why Hockenson is a consensus guy who could go in the top 10 because he can do both. But you're right. It's why as you know, Steve, teams have three tight ends because in some ways all three tight ends have different skill sets to be used in different ways.
Well, all right, well, let's move on. We're going to ask you about corners too because about 3 weeks ago we had one of the analytics guys on, and he started to get me – he put a bug in my ear about the Bills not worrying so much about pass rushers and maybe going and strengthening their cornerback roster because analytics tell you that corners are more important than edge rushers. So let's talk about the corners available in this draft. Who do you think may be the top couple of guys at that spot?
Well, you know, now you get into, too, what teams look for at corner. I mean, we know that everybody likes big and fast. That's a given. But you have someone like Greedy Williams, who's from LSU, who's 6'1 and 7/8, so he's 6'2". He's thin. He ran really, really well at the combine. You know, he has that size, length, speed profile that every NFL team loves. He's a young player. I think he was a redshirt sophomore. There were too many snaps in which he played with a lack of discipline. That could be a maturity issue. It could be a coaching issue. But he has everything that you ideally look for when you study a corner who's going to play on the outside in the NFL.
Like we had a guest on, I can't remember who it was, Steve, but it got our attention a couple of weeks ago. A guest of ours talking about the draft in the corners told us that Byron Murphy from Washington, what did he say, Steve? The best corner to come out in the last 3 years. Did he say that?
He did say that.
Well, I don't think I'd go that far.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty far, too.
Well, he said he was a zone type corner. He's not a man corner.
Murphy this year played left corner. He's shorter than ultimately desired. He's got very quick feet, but I wouldn't say he's fast. He played a ton of off coverage, bail and off coverage. There were snaps of press man, which I thought he played well, but he didn't play it. He didn't play it very much. I think he's a good prospect. I don't think he's, you know, a 3 or 4 year best prospect, but I think he's a solid prospect.
Yep. And yeah, we were told that, and he said because of the fit, and particularly here in Buffalo, he was a fit for their scheme because they do play the zone off kind of coverage a lot.
I would agree.
And he seems to play in space a lot. The size thing, it's hard to say because I didn't know how big or strong or fast he was. You think the size thing would be an inhibitor as in that kind of scheme?
No, and I'll tell you why, because you have to think about who they have right now. I mean, think about Tre'Davious White, who I think is a really good player, and White's 5'11". I think he was 192 pounds coming out. He certainly wasn't a burner on the outside. He's evolved in their scheme to be basically a shutdown corner when they do play man, and they play a lot of zone. And I think there's a corner coming out in this draft who is very similar to Tre'Davious White, and I look at DeAndre Baker from Georgia as that player. They're sort of size and some of their measurables are almost exactly the same. When you get into height, weight, arm length, you know, that profile is almost the same for both DeAndre Baker and Tre'Davious White.
Interesting. I had a corner I want to ask you about, Greg, that got my attention at the Senior Bowl from Temple, Rock Yassin, who I thought had an outstanding week down in Mobile, and he's pretty highly regarded, right? What do you think of Rock Yassin?
Yeah, I mean, he's a really good size corner. He's just under 6 feet, but he's really solidly built. I think he's a good prospect. You know, for those, I don't think he'll be universally regarded as a great prospect because he lacks some traits. He's not a twitchy or explosive guy. He's not necessarily smooth. He's kind of he's a very competitive guy. And I think that, you know, he played a lot of what we call mirror press man, mirror match press man, where he doesn't put his hands on the receiver. That would be physical press man. So he's more of a mirror press man corner. But I liked his tape. I'd be surprised if he's a first-round pick, but I think he's got a chance to be a good player.
I was reading about him, and you see this, you know, players obviously with their different backgrounds. Yassin is a one-year starter at Temple, transferred from a smaller school, I believe.
Presbyterian,
How much does it matter to NFL teams, you know, if a guy's a one-year starter, two-year starter, three-year starter, how much weight do you and NFL teams put into that? The kind of, you know, the extent of experience they have.
Well, I think everyone's different. I think there's examples where guys will say we don't like him because he's a one-year starter, and they don't feel that there's sample size or the production is strong enough. There's others who look at the traits and say, hey, he's an ascending player. He's going to get better. I think it works both. Hey, believe me, I remember when Carson Wentz came out of North Dakota State, right, and many people said, well, we can't draft him in the first round because he played at North Dakota State. So, you know, I think that that's team specific and organization specific. I know studies have been done, and these studies are position specific, where players from the Power Five conferences, let's say, at given positions such as O-line, tend to play in the NFL. So in other words, if you're looking for an offensive lineman in the fifth or sixth round, you're far better off taking a guy, you know, from Alabama or Mississippi State or Georgia than you are from South Dakota State, because those guys from the Power Five schools on the offensive line will play in the NFL.
Hey, Greg, before we let you go, I don't think we'll get you on the show before next Thursday night, 8 o'clock, when the draft begins. So, and I know you got 50 more players you'd like to see more video on, but who are your favorites? Or, you know, favorite, if you can isolate it down. Which guy are you really interested in watching next Thursday night?
Yeah, who's the nugget that you think you found that maybe nobody knows about?
Well, it's not that nobody knows about. I mean, look, we've all seen the mocks, and for the most part, that will play out. A player that I've been very, very high on, right from when I watched him, which was probably 2 months ago, and I just actually did hit a piece on him in the NFL matchup show, is the wide receiver from Iowa State, Akeem Butler. Like him a lot. Another player who's not going to be a high pick, who I watched on tape, is the running back from Temple, Rakell Armstead, who, you know, I think he's the kind of running back that you could plug into a Kyle Shanahan system, for instance. He could be your starter, and he could rush for 1,200 yards. So, you know, it's players like that make it really fun when you notice guys like that. We all know about the top guys, but it's sort of the guys who are not necessarily the top 10 or 15 players that tend to get me a little more excited.
I got you. Hey, I meant to tell you, I watched part of the NFL matchup draft special the other day. Please tell me it's going to be on again before next Thursday, right? Because I couldn't see the whole thing.
Well, this one will be on again, I believe, yes. And we also shoot a second one. That'll be on Tuesday night.
Okay.
This coming Tuesday night, there'll be a second one as well, a different show.
The show looked really solid, really solid. I watched it the other day. Matt Bowen is great.
He's great.
Yeah, he is
Matt
really
Bowen
solid.
Matt Bowen is so good.
Yeah, and you're pretty good yourself.
yeah, you're great. Well, that's why we have you on.
Appreciate that.
Thanks, Greg.
I try once in a while.
Greg, that was awesome. Thanks so much. And Butler's and your Rakell Armsteads. I hope they turn into Pro Bowl players and you can take the credit for it.
Yeah, and if they do, I will.
Exactly, yeah. He may be the only one that remembers, though, unfortunately. So.
Thanks, Greg.
No. Hey, there's social media now, Steve. Believe me, everybody remembers all the time.
Right, exactly.
Thanks, Greg. We'll talk next week. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Greg Cosell, he is executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer of NFL Films. I think it was two nights ago, Tuesday night, it was, I don't know, I'm flicking around channels, and it was, I want to say it was 10 minutes to 9, and I saw, oh, my goodness, there's Greg, there's Matt Bowen, there's Sal Palantoni, it's the show. And it was a great draft special. Right. It was unbelievable, and I only caught about 10 or 15 minutes of it.
It's a nuts and bolts show. It's fun to think about it and how teams view these guys.
Yeah.
You hear names, you hear statistics, and then you get a chance to see some insight into what teams are looking for and what they see, and it's pretty fun, and what the guy's going to be worth on Thursday night or Friday night.
Look for that on ESPN NFL Matchup this week and next week. You know, it's the longest running football show on television, 35 years. NFL Matchup.
I would say it's got to be in the running for right. What else?
It's great. It's a great show. All right, what do we got coming up? We got we're going to talk to NFL Network's Good Morning Football host, Kyle Brandt. He's standing by to join us coming up here in a couple of minutes, so come on back for that. More draft talk, more Bills talk, maybe a little schedule talk as well. Want to get your thoughts on the Bills schedule as well. What's your reaction? Give us a call or maybe tweet in a response. Steve and I coming back with more One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Show kind of has a life of its own, doesn't it, Steve Tasker?
Got a heartbeat and
it does.
Pulse.
It does. It doesn't need me. Doesn't
and a
need
temperature.
You. Has a life of its own. Steve will be on with his son Luke tomorrow. I'll be off getting a one-day break on the holiday. We're back in earnest next week. By the way,
are we back on Monday?
Yeah.
I'm just
and
asking.
Tuesday and Wednesday. Thursday, we'll be on at our regular time, noon to 3, next Thursday, draft day. And then we come back, I don't know if it's 7 or 8 p.m.
8. We're on at 8.
We're on at 8 p.m., and the draft will be underway. You and I will be covering the draft on the radio only a week from today, next Thursday. We did it last year. That was much more fun than I anticipated last. I mean, because there were two first-round picks, obviously.
Yeah, they
one of them a quarterback.
Up,
yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
a lot of fun last year. And then next Friday, a week from this Friday, day two of the draft, we'll be. I think we get the five-hour show that day. You up for that?
Why is that?
Well, we did it last year. You did not. You had something going on in New York, didn't you?
Oh, that was the no.
You weren't here.
All right, fine.
But it's 5 hours because we're recapping round one, and then we look ahead to round two. So a lot of draft coverage coming up right here next week. Speaking of the draft, a lot of draft coverage coming up on NFL Network. They do a great job, especially with Good Morning Football, which airs Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Eastern. And on the line with us right now, one of the co-hosts of Good Morning Football on NFL Network. Happy to have Kyle Brandt on the line. Kyle, John Murphy, Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
John and Steve, I'm thrilled to be on. I have so much love for the show. I have so much love for the Bills. Apparently, the NFL schedule makers do not.
I don't know. We're having a hard time. I know they're not going to be on prime time, but they do get the 4 o'clock window on Thanksgiving, and they've got a chance to flex that game with the Patriots into later. That doesn't bother me. I guess that's what you're referring to, right, is the fact they're not on prime time?
Yeah, I'm kidding, honestly, though. But I actually think it's a good thing. I think it's fine because I think the Bills right now are building something. Just stay in the grass for another year. Stay in the snake in the grass, build, get better, another year under Allen, and then you do what you need to do this year, and then 2020, you get the prime time. You don't want to go too early. I think that they're a really kind of sneaky team right now, and I don't think that's a bad thing for Buffalo.
Kyle, with the flex games, and as Steve mentioned, with the Thanksgiving game for the Bills at Dallas, how much should Bills fans interpret the schedule that came out last night as a slam to the Bills or maybe a doubt about their chances of being a good team this year? What should we read from that schedule?
Oh, not having nothing to do with them not being a good team. Listen, you guys have been through this for decades. Buffalo knows, if nothing else, who they are. It's actually what I respect about it. And listen, there's a certain component of TV ratings and national audience. You just let the Cowboys do their thing, be on national TV all they want. I don't think you take anything from it. Maybe there isn't a massive market yet or a hunger for the Bills, but there will be. Once they win, and if Josh Allen keeps jumping over linebackers, people will want to see it. That's why I just think this is a year early. Don't worry. Don't get slighted. You got great players. You have young receivers. It's an exciting time to be the Bills fan. And I think that a lot of people in the country don't know that. And I think that they will a year from now.
I do not dispute any of that, Kyle, but I think Bills fans look at the Cleveland Browns, who are what, 4 times in primetime this year, and the Bills are 0. Have the Browns accomplished that much more than the Bills have to merit that sort of national attention?
No, they're just that flashier parts. You know, we had on the schedule maybe this morning, just like you guys did. And I asked them the question. I said, okay, so I think it was March 13th. Odell Beckham Jr. gets traded from the Giants to the Browns. Does that affect things? They said, absolutely. All of a sudden, the networks start calling. We want to see the Browns. We want to see this. But the question is, they're flashier. Maybe they're more interesting because they have more famous players. But do they really have a better team? I started looking at the Bills' offense. I pulled it up just a couple of weeks ago. All of a sudden, it looks really good. If you look at Josh and you got – it sounds cool. It sounds like they're the Avengers. You got Zay and Smokey and Shady and Gore. I mean, sounds cool. And honestly, aside from that, there's some real talent out there, right? I mean, the most talented roster I think they've had in a long time, especially at the quarterback. So they can have their Odell and Jarvis Davis, and that's fine. And maybe they'll go 7-9. Who knows? I think the Bills have the talent really equal what the Browns could do.
Yeah, and I don't think when you talk about primetime games, it's not about the football teams. Do you really think the Giants are a more interesting team this year than the Buffalo Bills or the Cleveland Browns? I mean, the Giants are on 5 times. It's because they're in New York. I mean, that's why they're on, and that's why Washington is on, that's why Philly is on, that's why Dallas is on. It's the old NFC East. Those teams from those cities are going to go on. The Rams, the teams from the big markets are always going to be on because the TV networks feel safe that those are going to pull good numbers, and that's why, you know, that's the only reason it is. It has nothing to do with the quality of football almost. Certainly if there was a matchup like the Saints and the Rams in Buffalo's schedule, they would be on, but there's not at this point. That's all there is to it. I mean, it's not a slam. It's just the reality of television mechanics.
Let me see if I'm feeling this right. You guys give me the local vibe there. So it's okay. You can understand if his teams like Chicago, Los Angeles, New York get more primetime games. It makes sense. But you would draw the line at Cleveland. Like, enough with Cleveland. They can't be getting the line. Come on now.
You're probably right.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And they're right next door, too, which makes it even more pronounced. Yeah.
That's true.
We're kind of alike. We're kind of alike, these two cities. Hey, Kyle, when you look at this schedule, any games stick out for you? For instance, what do you think of the NFL giving it another shot at Azteca Stadium in Mexico City, again with the Chiefs, this time against the Chargers, a Monday night game in November? That game stands out, especially as we all wait to find out whether the field will be okay that day.
Yeah, I mean, we got to make that thing right. That was tough.
If you know
the backstory, the reason the game didn't happen is because of Shakira, of all things, and her concert has muddied up the field, and she's doing Hips Don't Lie, and all of a sudden the NFL saying, sorry, we got to go to the Coliseum. We got to make that right. And they will, and I think it was ready. Just as long as there isn't some a Colombian pop singer concert the night before, it should be really cool. I dig the international games. I got to go to London last year. I saw the crowd. I've watched those London games for a long time. Until you actually go there, you don't understand. You say, yeah, sure, they love the NFL. I'm sure they do. And then if you walk the streets of London and certainly go in the pubs and see 5,000 Eagles fans, it really is legit. Yeah. So if they go to the pubs, I would also do the same in Mexico. I'm waiting.
Yeah, well, as much as the Bills, we said they were ignored by prime time, you guys on Good Morning Football have spent a lot of time talking about him. You thought Josh Allen's hurdle was like the play of the year last year. And it was fun. And for us in Buffalo, we were watching the whole thing, and we watched him all through the season. You kind of forget that there were some moments in that season that were a lot of fun. And you kind of singled out Josh's kind of arrival play in week 3 of the season where he jumped over Barr, and it's fun to go back and watch that game and see that play happen.
It's a shocking game because I remember everyone thought the Vikings were so loaded and the Bills, new quarterback. And not only that play, but the day itself and the game and the win, and I guess it's a sign of things to come. I look at this team right now. Steve, you remember specifically, if you go back, back in the day, there was, when you showed up, the 86 team, nothing. The 87 team, nothing. And then 88, boom, the whole thing just exploded. I feel like right now, this team is kind of in that ramp up with the young, cool quarterback and the young players, and they're in that second year of building something. It starts to feel a little bit familiar. That's why I'm optimistic about it. I've seen it before.
If you had a team, Kyle, and I've said the exact same thing, I agree with you. It was for a team that I played on, and it was. It's more fun to be the team that's on the rise almost than it is to be the team that's got to fight everybody off. This is the fun part after you've been through a long dry spell to try to have a team that actually puts it together and is really tough to beat. Do you agree with that?
100%. I mean, I look at the 87 team, as far as I remember, you guys did not have a great record, but you must have known that something was brewing. And all I can go on, that's serious with you, my own experience is, I've gotten to speak with a bunch of the players over the last 2 years. We've had them on as guests. We've had them on. And they all have a little chip. Like, there's a little edge to it, especially last year when Josh Allen started playing. And I think my takeaway from what you learned from rookie year of Josh Allen, he's tough. I mean, maybe he'll get better as a passer, and you hope he will. But you know he's not afraid, and he's really tough. And I look in Buffalo, that goes a long way. So you can build on that. As long as it's not soft, doesn't want to get hit, doesn't want to make a play, I feel like, to your point, there is something exciting going on, and maybe it is more fun to be part of that because you can see the end of the year.
On the line with Kyle Brandt from NFL Network. He is co-host of NFL Network's Good Morning Football, which airs Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Eastern. Speaking of players you talked to, you had Niagara Falls native Kadri Allison, Canisius High School and Buffalo graduate, Pittsburgh running back. You had him on the show the other day. How did he wind up there, and what did you think of him, Kyle?
Oh, we love it. We're going from GMFB to GMRB. It's all running back. We have all of them here. I love them. Actually, I got to tell you, I like the off-air conversations. I'm a family man. I got little kids. We're doing all the Disney stuff and the Griswold thing. And I said to them, I said, I've never actually been to Niagara Falls. Tell me on it. Niagara Falls or Grand Canyon, who you got? And he went into a long, impassioned rant about the merits of Niagara Falls, and it makes me want to go. He's a hell of a player. He's also a hell of an ambassador for that part of the country.
Yeah, you got to get up here and see the falls. Yeah, nothing against Grand Canyon, by the way, but the falls is pretty special as well.
No, he broke it down. You got to see it from the Canadian side. You're going to like it so much. I have all the details now because it's this great running back.
You got to jump on the Maid of the Mist and go right up near the falls and everything. Yeah. So got to jump on the boat. Yeah.
So we just had the release of the schedule yesterday, Kyle. Is there any one game from any two teams that you have got to see this year?
Oh, man, there's a lot of them. You know, there's a game that really jumps out at me, and you guys are going to throw up because I'm going to mention a New York market. But I'm always fascinated when the Giants and the Patriots get together, all right? If the Giants are going to the Patriots in one of the series of this NFL 100 things they're doing, looking at classic matchups, that's one of them. I just think Tom Brady, and nobody knows this better than anybody in the AFC, has almost a perfect life. There's a perfect career, respect, money, family, everything. And if there's one thing that's the fly in the ointment with him, it's Eli Manning. Eli Manning has personally taken two Super Bowl rings from him. So the idea that Eli is going to Foxborough, where he never lost, where he took down two Super Bowl banners like a conquering hero, in a year when he really has something to prove, I get excited about Patriots-Giants, Brady versus Eli, unless, of course, the Giants have taken Dwayne Haskins in the draft and he's already starting at that point. But we'll see.
Hey Kyle, we're a week away from round one of the draft. You got a plan for the Bills in the early going in the draft, a player or a position group they should focus on?
Well, it's exciting. I mean, I always look at it as a fan. You always want the flashy players. You want the wide receivers. You want the quarterbacks. It's like when you got the box of donuts, you want the chocolate sprinkles or the maple pie. That's the ones you want. But last year, they already had the quarterback draft. So this year, they're in this great position, number 9, and everybody is just saying the defensive players are going to be raining out of the sky in Nashville. My colleague, Peter Schrager, sits at the table with me, has been going with Ed Oliver, the defensive lineman from Houston, in his mock draft. I just think somebody like that, only because I like the weapons offensively already. I mean, they got a new center, they got a deep threat, they got a slot guy, they got running back. Let's go on defense. Let's build something that Jordan can work with. Or, I don't know how you guys feel about this, I don't mind them moving back either. Because if they don't need a quarterback, which means they're in control, and if somebody behind them, like Denver's right after them, wants to move up and get a quarterback, then trade it. Move back. It's a position of power. So I feel one of those great D linemen, and I'd definitely be open for this.
Yep. Hey Kyle, not only will the players, the draftees, be the stars next week, I think the city of Nashville will be as well. And you guys, Good Morning Football is going to broadcast live from Nashville Thursday through Saturday, 7 a.m. next week, starting a week from today. That's going to be fun. And I really do think America, if it's not aware of it yet, is going to find out that Nashville is a really, really good place, a cool place to be.
Oh, they're ready to roll, man. John, I got to tell you, everybody listening, I was going to say we're going to be in a bar to do the show in Nashville, but it's not a bar. I've been corrected on that already. It's a honky-tonk, completely different species of establishment. We'll be there. It's live music everywhere. Dolly Parton is going to be part of the draft. Really, really absorbing this thing. There'll be hot chicken and mobile bachelorette parties. I'm going to be in costume. I got my belt buckle already. It is really going to be a Southern-style party. Remember when they used to have this thing in New York every year? It was fine. It worked. But now, I mean, we're doing Nashville this year. We're going to Vegas next year for the draft. It is going to be so fun, and our shows will be wall-to-wall with that stuff.
It's going to be great. Yeah.
Last thing I've got for you, Kyle. Even at this early juncture of the season when we haven't played a game, you've made an early call on Coach of the Year. And you think the new head coach of the Miami Dolphins has got a chance to do it. Yeah, Brian Flores, tell us your opinion on that. How'd that come to pass that you think he's got a chance to be Coach of the Year?
See, you know, we do some wild segments on our show, man. We do 3 hours live, shooting around with no games and no anything. And sometimes you find yourself in a conversation that you didn't even know you maybe had it. And all of a sudden, I just said, you know what, I'll take my shot. We take bold shots. The fact is, the first time we saw Brian Flores, right, defensive coordinator for the Patriots, what was he doing? He was taking Sean McVay's offense and dunking it in the toilet on national television in the Super Bowl. It was incredible. One of the best performances we've ever seen. And I just go into early returns. Listen, I don't know if Bills fans want to hear this, but these Miami Dolphins players are shitting about Flores. They like him. They relate to him. It's all business. It's very, very different from Gase, who now you got to deal with the Jets. And I think they're going to get a quarterback. And that's actually the touch of the year. He usually goes to first-year guys. You make a little improvement, a little bump, that's all it means. It doesn't mean the Dolphins are going to the Super Bowl. It may not even go to the playoffs. But I think Flores will work down there. And it's kind of interesting, right, guys? Like, we're at the end of the Patriots era, sort of. We think maybe in the next couple of years, and I feel like the other three teams are just going to line up. Bills, Jets, Dolphins. Who is going to step up? Who's going to sit in the Iron Throne? Because I think it's almost ready to be vacated, which is why it's so exciting.
We'll find out. Hey, Kyle, have a great week with the draft. Have fun in Nashville. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us here today.
Anytime, Jonathan. Appreciate it so much.
Thanks.
Thanks, Kyle.
Kyle Brandt is the co-host of NFL Network's Good Morning Football, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Eastern, and starting next Thursday through Saturday, 7 a.m. Eastern from the NFL Draft in Nashville. How about that? He says you do a three-hour live show every weekday. Sometimes you don't know what you're saying.
Well, and plus no games to talk about.
No game to talk about, yeah.
This time who else does that?
We do it. Yeah. We do it. I feel your pain, Kyle. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Steve and I coming back. Hey, what do you think of the Bills' schedule? We got time when we come back to take a few phone calls, perhaps. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We're back with more One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live, John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Coming up at 2. You want to talk schedule? We've got the guy who put it together. Mike North is going to join us at 2 o'clock from the NFL. I want to get his title right. He's the NFL's Vice President of Broadcast Planning and Scheduling. I talked to Mike North last October, Monday Night Football, prior to the Bills game on the air, on the Bills Patriots broadcast, right, about scheduling. And I want you to ask him your question. How come you can't come up with this 2 weeks sooner? And let him tell you how difficult it is, because it's difficult.
We've been talking about how difficult it was has been, and I showed you the Michael Carwin, who is a mathematician who does research in the UB. The people here in Buffalo got, I believe it's UB, they got the three-year research grant from the NFL to help them do this schedule thing. There are more permutations of the Bills or the NFL's seasonal schedule than there are, and listen to this, than there are atoms in the universe.
That sounds a little bit exaggerated, but
he says it's 10 to the 80th power atoms in the universe. It's 10 to the 300th possibilities for the NFL schedule. How is that even possible?
I don't know. We will
but
talk
there it
to,
is.
Michael
That's
North
what he said.
That.
And there you go.
Hey, we can talk about the schedule, too, with you. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A couple of tweets from the tweet sheet on the schedule, Bill's schedule. Tiffany Daniels, I absolutely do not like the team has to play a Sunday home game against Denver, then has to travel to Dallas for a Thursday game. It gives the players no time for recovery, little prep time for the coaches having to travel to Dallas. It's a big advantage for the Cowboys. It's the normal, you're right, Tiffany, to a certain extent, but it is the normal Thursday quick turnaround time that you get with Thursday night football.
And the Cowboys got to do it too.
Except they're home. They don't have to travel
there. Well, yeah, but, yeah.
And it's better to be home against Denver, obviously, than it would be to be on the road. But I get it. That's the argument people have about Thursday night football. Now, the league will tell you there's no indication that Thursday night football produces more injuries, but it will be an abbreviated week for the Bills, right? So let's think about it. Home game on Sunday before against the Denver Broncos. That date is November 24th, Monday the 25th. Bills likely to have a little walkthrough, recovery-type practice, and probably don't even look at the video of the Broncos game. They get right into Cowboys preps. They'll practice probably the only real practice day they get that week would be Tuesday, right? And then on Wednesday, they'll have like a kind of a limited practice, walkthrough-type practice, and then
travel.
They fly
Wednesday.
So it'll be a very abbreviated practice week, similar to what they do on a typical Thursday night game week, and it's not ideal. You're right about that.
It's not, but it's not that much easier for the Cowboys either, so they're not going to get like an extra day. They just do not have to travel, which is only in 4 hours out of the 4 days that makes a difference. So.
One more from the tweet sheet, and this is a great fan perspective, which I want to make sure we don't dismiss or don't acknowledge. Frank Barber tweets this in. Has there ever been an away schedule with so many desirable potential road trips? In my opinion, this year is exceptional. It's really, and it is the way fans look at it, right? He's talking about two trips to New York, Nashville, Cleveland right down the road, Miami with its obvious charms, Dallas on Thanksgiving, at Pittsburgh, drivable, kind of a classic stadium in Pittsburgh, maybe a meaningful game mid-December, and then Foxborough. Frank Barber's right. From a fan's perspective, if you want to travel to road games, this might be the all-time schedule for Bills fans.
Yeah, this schedule is the best one in years. And it's, you know, that's five home games in the first half of the season, a big stretch where you've got home games, and the team doesn't have to travel at all with a bye mixed in there. It's – is pretty favorable. There's just no other way to put it. Even the Thanksgiving week, where most teams will have a different kind of schedule so that the players can have a Thanksgiving with their families anyway. You've got it. You get the marquee game of the entire week. You're the team that plays in Dallas at the 4 o'clock game on Thanksgiving. Good.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good schedule
for a fan who wants to travel. I think it's really good. All right, yeah. We got one more hour to go. We're going to talk about scheduling with Michael North, the NFL's Vice President of Broadcast Planning and Scheduling. How did this all come together? We'll talk with Mike North about that when we return. Come on back. One more hour to go. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.